Okay, talk real quick.
Hello?
Yes, okay.
Sweet.
Can you hear yourself? You good now?
Oh, wait, actually? Oh, yeah, I can hear myself.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. I mean, pretty normal after recording music.
Oh, yeah, you're a pro at this already.
Yeah.
That's why you know all the mic shit, too. I always feel so bad when I'm, like, trying to, I don't know, I'm like, oh, this is how you do it or whatever, when I don't know jack shit. And I know that, like, other people like you who work with audio equipment are like, oh, like, I know what I'm doing. But you're not a dick about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But every mic is a little different. So it's good to tell people what's good, what's not.
Yeah.
Because I have some mics that I could set over there and they'd sound fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Which is so cool. I don't know. I literally don't know shit about technology and it's probably really bad. I have to take comp sci next semester and I think I'm going to die.
That's rough.
Yeah.
Good luck.
I'm like, I'm a humanities major for a reason. Like, this is going to be so brutal, but oh, well, got to do what you got to do. But I am very excited for today because I'm excited to talk to you.
I'm excited to be talked to.
Well, it's funny, too, because you were one of the first friends, too, that my roommate and I made here. Because, okay, do you want to say how we met?
I do.
Go for it.
Okay, so I live a floor below Casey. Mm-hmm. So when I bang the ceiling, she can hear, and if she jumps, I'll hear.
And literally, okay, wait, we met on the dorm building Zoom call, right?
Yes.
And we got split into, did we just get split into breakout rooms? Is that how it happened?
Yes. I think we were maybe already like chatting each other
yeah.
when we got split into breakout rooms, and then we got to talk on the Zoom call instead yeah. of just in the little chat window.
Right. And then we didn't have any, oh yeah, because you guys would just chat us. That's what it was. The Zoom chat. And we didn't have any way of communicating with you. Like, we realized after the Zoom ended, we were like, oh, how are we going to talk to them? Like, we don't have any of their contact info. And so we were just like stomping on the floor and you guys would just hit the ceiling. And we just, you knew Morse code though.
Well, a few letters.
A few things. We didn't know shit. So we were just kept jumping. And then I had the brilliant idea to stick my head out the window and yell to you guys and be like, what's your Snapchats? Because we didn't know how to talk to you. But
yeah,
just pandemic things.
And the rest is history.
Exactly. And then we went to dinner with you and your roommate. And that was fun. And we got, do you like how I like literally grilled you on politics too on like yeah. the first day?
No, actually, I really enjoyed that.
I'm so glad. I feel like both of our roommates were kind of like, what the fuck are they doing?
Yeah. That's normally the reaction.
Yeah. Like, and we're just going at it. But okay, yeah. So I normally like to kind of start with like the beginning years to kind of get a sense of what your childhood was like and growing up and stuff. So how would you kind of describe your childhood?
Yeah. So I was born in Austin, Texas with my family. I have a mother, a father, and an older brother who is 4 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, it was pretty quiet. Me and my brother would play blocks and Legos with each other, all sorts of things. I was homeschooled for all of elementary school, so my life didn't actually change very significantly for a while. When I turned 6, we moved from North Austin to East Austin into a more dangerous and urban part of town that was not dangerous at all.
He's doing air quotes, by the way.
it's just a very, yeah, it was you know, white people being afraid at the time.
Yeah.
And I would say that my family has for a long time been like a cornerstone that keeps me going in life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a big source of stability. Right around the time that we moved, we also adopted my sister from Ethiopia. So I now have a younger sister who is 7 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a nice age spread between the family.
Yeah.
But definitely she kept us from being too boring as we were getting older. And me and my brother are both pretty quiet book reading types. I mean, so it was nice to have another kid in the family. And I think, yeah, growing up looked a lot just like, waking up, doing school at home during mm-hmm. elementary school, going on walks with my mom, eating dinner with the family, going to church on Sundays, and then seeing a lot of church people in everyday life. So yeah. Lots of friends from church, and all my friends who were kids before I went to middle school were just friends from church as well.
Well, that's super interesting to me too, because like I'm sure with you being homeschooled, that obviously too was like a big, like the church is bound to be where you have a lot of your friends and stuff, because you're not really necessarily meeting them through, you know, your classes or whatever it is. But what was like being homeschooled like? Because that is so, like, that's just not a world that I lived in at all. So I can't, you know, I don't have a good image of what that's like in my head.
Yeah, it was really nice. I think it was very variable for different subjects. So for Spanish, it was like I had a personal tutor who I could mm-hmm. talk to. For math, I got to work at my own pace, finish worksheets, move ahead in the book. I had math textbooks that I just worked through. For science, I got to do really advanced science.
Yeah,
that set me up so nicely for middle school and high school. And I think there's just a lot, especially if you're disciplined and you have a sharp mind as a kid, that you can benefit from being homeschooled.
Mm-hmm.
But you also lose out on a lot of social things that I had to learn how to catch up on in sixth and seventh yeah. grade.
How was that transition then from homeschool to, you know, normal school, if you will?
Yeah, I think the transition is a lot rougher than it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
I had my sixth grade advisory teacher, who is a real jerk to me. And I had him not only for advisory, but also for an elective class I was taking as a sixth grader.
No.
And he'd known my older brother because I went to the same middle school. And for some reason, because he knew my older brother, or just because he was having a bad day, he thought that he could single me out and pick on me in advisory in those elective classes. And that was really rough, because I'd never like had to struggle with bad authority figures in my life. And that was the first time where I was like faced with someone who was in a position of power over me, who was singling me out and being mean to me. So I came home a lot and cried. And I did eventually get switched out of his advisory class, but it was just a sort of rude awakening to the mean nature of the world.
No, that's a hard realization when you realize that like adults can be jerks too. Because I feel like a lot of times with kids, you're talking about it in the context of other kids. And then it's like you realize that like it's not, you know, reserved for like meanness is not reserved for other kids, and that people in positions of power can be dicks too. And like that's just such a hard thing to grasp as a kid. You know, it's just like a really exactly what you said, like rude awakening of like, oh, not everyone is great, and not every adult is trying to help me and be nice to me, and that sucks. That's a pretty rough thing. How was it like socially?
Socially, it was a mix. Yeah. I made some friends who I really liked and I'm still friends with to this day. And there are a lot of friends who I was like, oh, this is a good person. And I was like, you know, after spending some time with them, I was like, oh no, I could never spend time with that person.
Scratch that.
Yeah. And that took a lot of time to figure out. And I'm still figuring out parts of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just learning how to fit in and be seen as like a normal middle schooler and then later even a normal high schooler just took a lot of time and work, because people have all these expectations, especially when they've been together for kindergarten and then all of elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
They talk in the same ways, they act in the same ways, they have like a sort of culture. And coming in as an outsider, I was obviously not a member of that culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to figure out how to fit in.
Yeah. Did you play any sports or like do any extracurriculars too that like helped with getting to know people?
I didn't do a lot of those things. I was in orchestra.
Okay.
And that ended up being probably the worst part of middle school.
No.
My orchestra director was even worse and even meaner than that first really mean teacher.
Oh my God.
So he was really big into competitive music, where we would do like our UIL competition.
And what's UIL? I'm not a music person, so I just don't know.
Some sort of interscholastic league. I forget what it exactly stands for. But the idea is your fine arts all have like a varsity orchestra or varsity band, or you have a varsity sport, and you go. And for orchestra, you play for a panel of judges, and they rate your performance. And they have, like, each of the judges gives you a number, and a one is the best number.
Okay.
So the goal for varsity orchestra was always, you know, you have to get all ones. And then the big goal is like, oh, we want to be the best orchestra in the state. And Texas is a big state.
Texas is a big state.
So there are these things where he would be like, well, you know, my orchestra last year was really close. We were like third in the state. Like this year, like, we just need like these players. We need to be more disciplined. We need more after school practices.
This is middle school?
It was really bad.
Oh God.
So my 7th grade year was pretty pressury, but we had like the assistant orchestra director who spent a lot of time with our orchestra. But then in 8th grade, I moved up to the top orchestra.
Snazzy.
And my orchestra director was like, okay, this is our year, you know, we're gonna be state honor orchestra.
Oh my God.
We're gonna do sectionals and practice a ton. And it's hilarious looking back on it. And he would yell at us a lot for random things. I remember being after school on like Monday afternoons one day, and he was yelling at the second violin section. And I know that all the other second violins hadn't practiced their music, so the only person he could hear playing was me, because everyone was hiding behind my playing. So when he was yelling at the whole section, I felt like he was yelling just at me. I started like sobbing in the middle of like orchestra practice. And that was really, really hard for me. And it was so ironic, because after being yelled at so much and him being like, this is the worst orchestra I've ever directed, and you guys are so irresponsible, we actually won state honor orchestra.
Oh my God.
And then he pretended like he had been nice to us the whole time.
Oh my God. Okay, and are you the same as me? Because I'm a goody two-shoes when it comes to like how I interact with teachers, coaches, that kind of thing. And so whenever like I think back to like middle school and elementary school and stuff, and like say something like little had happened, or like I was maybe talking or something happened and a teacher like called me out for it, I like literally, I would either start crying or be like super close to starting to cry. Like it would mess me up.
Yeah. I would say I'm very similar.
Yeah. Like it's, I don't know. I feel like a lot of kids, like, it's just like, whatever. The teacher told me to be quiet, and I'm like, oh my God, they hate me now. Like I'm a bad student. Like, or I always wanted to like plead my case and be like, no. She was asking for help on understanding this problem. So I was trying to help her. Like I wasn't trying to talk over you while you were teaching. Like, and it was just like, who cares? But I just was so concerned about how adults in authority roles perceive me.
Yeah. I think that's been a big struggle for me as well. And yeah, so after orchestra, once I went to high school, I was like, that experience was so horrible that I just never want to do any sort of competitive anything again where I have a coach or a teacher who can be mean to me.
Which sucks, because it's like a lot of times, you know, there are a lot of coaches or teachers or people like that who can be like amazing role models and mentors, but you have an experience like that and you're like, why would I ever want to do this again? Like, this person belittled me and made me feel like shit, so why would I subject myself to that?
Yeah.
Like, that's just, ugh. So when you got to high school and stuff, did you feel like you kind of had adapted a little bit better to the sort of kid culture and whatnot, or was it still? Because I know high school can be, it's just another world, you know? It's a tough place to navigate for anyone, so I feel like having, you know, switched from homeschooling to being in regular school and then having that shit experience with orchestra, like that's got to be kind of a tough like set up for high school.
Yeah, I think going into high school, I still had a lot to figure out. I was still a really awkward freshman. And I think a lot of people, I mean, had similar experiences, because it's not like me being homeschooled and then going to school for 3 years put me at a really severe disadvantage. Mm-hmm. But I was still not perfectly socially normal freshman year.
Yeah.
But I got there.
Yeah.
Over time, little by little. And I think the summer actually between eighth grade and the end of eighth grade leading into freshman year was probably one of the harder summers of my life.
Mm.
Because after, like, orchestra and a whole mix of things, eighth grade led me to feeling pretty sad and down. And the end of eighth grade is when I struggled most acutely with like depression.
Mm-hmm.
So in the summer leading up to freshman year, I was like figuring out how to live with that. And then going to high school, it was like this whole new challenge of like figuring out how to live with some lingerings of depression and trying to figure that out and be happy and make friends. But I did make a lot of really good friends in high school,
well, which
was amazing. And actually freshman year I did. In my biology class, I met my best friend.
Oh, I love that so much. Yeah. So, you know, when you were kind of coming to this realization of I'm feeling kind of sad, I don't feel good, did you have a name for it? Like, did you know that it was depression, or was it something in hindsight that you could see was depression, or did you kind of know that at the time?
I think I was pretty aware of it at the time. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who had struggled with a very similar thing just a year before. Mm-hmm. As a seventh grader. So I wasn't blind to what depression looked like and how it could affect people, but I was aware that I was struggling with it.
How did it like affect you exactly? Like, what did you experience day to day?
I think I felt very alone a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And like in my head, I would believe that no one or very few people like really cared and really wanted to help me. And I think I just lacked a lot of motivation. I wanted to sleep a whole lot.
Yep.
And it was weird. I don't know. I was really antisocial. I didn't want to talk to many people, hang out with many people. And at some point there's like this, when it's at its worst, there's this feeling of like despair, of like existential dread.
Yeah.
Like, what if life doesn't matter? And what if the choices I make don't matter or influence the world in any way? Like, is the world changed by me being here?
Mm-hmm.
Does it matter that I'm alive and making choices? And when I'm okay and on a good day, I can always say like, oh no, of course, you know, I matter. And of course, my being here changes the world, because I talk to people every day, so I'm affecting lives. But it is really hard, especially when I'm alone and I'm not talking to people, to kind of get those cycles going in my head. And it's a sort of negative feedback loop where I start thinking in that way, and then I don't want to talk to people, so then I don't get out of that cycle of thinking. And I just think there were a number of months before high school where I was really down.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think the negative feedback loop too is perfectly describes it, because it's like the symptoms of depression end up making your depression worse, because then you withdraw and those like thought spirals are just so hard to get out of. And it's like, even when you look at it, when you're in a good place, you're like, oh, I can rationally say that those thoughts are wrong. You know, like I matter. But when you're not in a good place, like you can't think rationally. It's just like not really an option sometimes. So it's super hard to be able to like turn that off. And did you see a therapist or anything too? Or did you tell your parents? Like, how open about it were you with kind of people around you?
Well, at the time, I did not want to be open with the people around me at all. Mm-hmm. Since I thought, A, they wouldn't care, and B, I didn't really want a lot of people to know.
Yeah.
So I think I was under the illusion that I was doing a great job keeping my feelings really secret, mm-hmm. when I think anyone that looked at me could have known how I felt and how how I was struggling. So looking back, I was like the it was really stupid. But what happened is originally my friends at school went and told the school counselor, who pulled me out of class and talked to me, and as they're obligated to do, told my parents. And I honestly think that having my struggle in eighth grade probably put, and into freshman year, probably put a lot of strain on my parents, where they had to figure out, like, how do we parent and love our child well while he's struggling with this?
Yeah.
But ultimately, it ended up being my parents that were the most helpful. And looking back now, the thing that helped the most was when they confronted me about how I was acting, how I was feeling, which was terrifying to me. They were like, "We want to talk to you." I was like, "Oh my God, like, I don't want to talk."
Yeah.
But now, and even like a month later, I was so glad that they did. And
right.
They made a really good effort, and I followed through on it to check in on me and address what they saw and how I was acting.
Yeah.
So I owe a lot of my well-being to them.
Mm-hmm.
I did see a therapist, apart from the school counselor, once or twice, and I did not love it. I still haven't had any great experiences with therapists. I went back in the summer of junior year as well, when I was sort of struggling with similar things again.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never found it to be very helpful. I've never had a great connection with a therapist. Since I feel like I don't know, I'm nervous, and maybe this is just me, because I understand a lot of therapists are very good natured and just genuinely kind people.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm paying to like have a friend who listens to my problems.
I think a lot of people feel like that.
And that feels really like fake to me.
Yeah. I think that's like a perfectly normal feeling. I think a lot, like, I remember kind of feeling like that too in the beginning too, and being like, am I literally just like paying someone to listen to my shit and like pretend to be my friend when, you know, the 50 minutes is up and they're like, all right, bye, good session today. Like, it feels kind of weird. But I think for me, at least, I got a lot out of it. I didn't in the beginning, because I had kind of shitty therapists before. I mean, they weren't bad. It's just like, now comparing them to my current therapist, I'm like, oh, y'all, like, we're just not even close. But like, I feel like, you know, it's especially when you kind of are in that position of feeling like you're sort of burdening the people around you, or like, you know, you're making it harder on your parents or your friends or whoever it is. It's that added idea of like, I'm literally paying someone to listen to me, is like, it's kind of a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah.
So I definitely get that. Did you ever consider, or are you like medicated? Was that ever a route that you were thinking about?
No, I think I'm terrified of anything that could have any like psychoactive effects on me. So I have a very strong personal repulsion to a lot of drugs for that reason, and a lot of medicine for that reason. I try to take only the medicine that I need in like an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken me a long time to like get to a place where when I have a headache, I feel comfortable taking headache medicine.
Interesting.
Which is weird. But I think when I was depressed, and to this day, I'm nervous about seeing the world differently than it is, mm-hmm. and having my perception influenced. And I understand that antidepressants and medications like that don't like affect people in the way that I would imagine they do, or like the way that my subconscious mind mm-hmm. tells me that it would. But I've just never wanted to explore that.
Yeah. No, I feel like that's a lot of people's thing too. I think medication is very, varies from individual to individual and how they feel about it. Like for me, I never had any like aversion to the idea of medication, because I think when my migraines and stuff started, like I had just been taking so many different medications for so long. Like I tried all these different like heavy, like hard duty drugs and stuff. And so it was just another pill to me, you know, it wasn't really anything different. And for me, medication made a huge, huge difference. But for a lot of people, I mean, like I'm in abnormal psychology right now. It's like such an amazing class, highly recommended if you're a Northeastern student. But you know, we talk a lot about like the development of drugs and how, when it comes to the field of mental health, like drugs and like just the pharmacology aspect of it is so underdeveloped and so lacking compared to other areas, like in terms of like precision medicine and how well they can treat specific disorders. It's so shitty. And they talked about it, like one of the, doctors that we like listened to speak was talking about how it's kind of, he gave the analogy of like, if your brain is like a car engine, it's just you like pouring oil all over the car engine and being like, well, some of it's going to trickle into like the right spot, but like the rest of it's like, you're just like dunking it in oil and it's not really going to solve the problem. So I think it's hard like trying to sell that to someone and be like, here, take this thing that might have really shitty side effects for you, but maybe it'll work. Like it's a hard sell. And I feel like, especially because a lot of them take a while to even see effects. If they are going to work well, like sometimes several weeks. And then if not, you're like, oh great, I have all these shitty side effects. Like that's awesome. But I think it does. It definitely does just like vary from person to person. And I don't think that that's, you know, because I feel like people have different opinions on it. And I think sometimes people are really shitty in how they judge other people for that, because they're like, why would you not want to be medicated, or like just take the drugs or whatever? And it's like, no, like everyone has their own preference. And I think a lot of people share that same sentiment of like, is this going to stifle my creativity? And, you know, this is also another like random story, but I remember my senior year of high school, I sat in on this philosophy class and the teacher was talking, they read, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which I don't know if you know it, but I think in the first, like the opening of the book or something, they have these, I think they're called dials or something, where basically they can just change their emotions at any moment. And there's this like interaction between like this husband and wife, and the wife's feeling sad and the husband's like, oh, just change your dial. And she's like, no, I don't want to, like, I want to feel it. And he doesn't understand why she wouldn't just change it to happy, basically. And they get in like a fight over it. And then we start having this discussion of like, if you could take away those painful emotions and stuff and you had a dial, like, would you choose to use it? And then how is that akin to medication if you're, you know, dealing with a mental illness or something? And I was really thinking about that, of like, if I could, you know, have a magic wand and like wipe away my mental illness, like, would I? And I was like, I don't know if I would. I feel like it's very, you know, it's a big part of who I am and how I've developed empathy for other people and connection and like humanity. But also it sucks. So it's like, you know, is that the same as being medicated? Am I just choosing to take that away? And I think for me, I've come to the realization that I feel that medication allows me to be more fully me, because I still understand what it looks like to have those like really deep, dark pitfalls. But I also feel like I can function in the way that I want to be able to function day to day, because, you know, it's one thing to be, to gain that empathy and stuff, but if I can't leave my room and ever interact with other human beings, then like, what purpose is that serving? But I definitely think it's a really like personal choice for people. And I hate when people like shame others for that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. And I have a lot of friends who I respect that are on medication pretty mm-hmm. regularly, and that's great. And it's always really interesting to hear what they have to say.
Yeah.
So thanks for sharing.
Yes. Me ranting on your podcast.
Oh, no, it's your podcast. Really. Yeah. And I think I've had to be really careful about making sure that I have what I need around me and in my life
yeah.
to keep me stable. And returning maybe briefly to the subject of therapists,
yeah.
the people who I trusted the most to really give insight into my life and help me figure things out are my dad and my brother, because they're both very like similar people to me. Where it's not just that they know me really well, but I think they also think in a lot of the yeah. same ways. So in high school, talking with my dad was like this really productive thing always, that always helped me out a lot to stay focused and aware of like, oh, what I'm hearing is just high schoolers talking. It's not the way the world is.
Yeah.
So he for a really long time helped keep me sane, and I would come visit my college, or no, not my college, my brother, while he was in college gotcha. Every semester. And similarly, visiting my brother was always really, really wonderful, because he would speak such great insight into my life, and he would always be really encouraging. And he was always really good about pointing out any like bad behaviors or like patterns of thought that I had
mm-hmm.
when we were talking. He would be like, oh, you shouldn't think like that. Mm, or you shouldn't say so that. Key. Like, oh, I see, like you have a habit, like stop that.
Yeah.
And he's always been so good about being so direct in a way that a lot of people aren't, and a lot of people who don't understand me wouldn't recognize that as like, oh, that's a bad pattern that you should change. Mm-hmm. So when I was applying to college, where I am now, I only really looked at schools at home where my dad is, and then in Boston because my brother lives here with mm-hmm. his wife. So I really mostly just applied to like every school in Boston, because I really wanted to make sure that I had a brother nearby.
Yeah. I think that's so key. Like having that kind of relationship, not only just like with anyone, but like with your family, like your dad and your brother, is so, like they're going to understand you in a way that other people might not be able to. And I think the huge thing is, yeah, how you process information, how you think about things. Cause like, my sister and I are super close, but we think in completely different ways. So there are things like that where we, you know, if I say something to her, that might be offensive kind of in a way. Whereas, you know, if someone were said that to me, it wouldn't be, like in terms of trying to help each other with what we're going through. And so I feel like that's such a key thing of like when you process the world the same way. And I think I also feel like just being direct with that kind of stuff, like a lot of people are really afraid of that, but I don't know. I feel like in general, it's really helpful, because so many people are afraid to talk about mental illness and are afraid to talk about like what it actually feels like and like the thoughts that you have. And so when someone else can just be like, hey, I'm noticing that you're, you know, being really self-deprecating, or you're, you know, going in this kind of circle here, that can be so helpful of being like, oh, like you see me, and like you're, you know, calling out something that maybe I was subconsciously doing and not even really realizing it. Like, I just feel like that's so beneficial sometimes. And yeah. I just love that you have that relationship with your brother too.
It's great.
It's so cool. And how about your mom? Like, was she really involved in it too? Or, you know, what was your kind of dynamic?
And I have a great relationship with my mom. And yeah, normally I talk to my brother and dad about intellectually things, and then like ourselves and philosophy and what have you. And my mom is very empathetic and cares a lot about people. Mm-hmm. So we would just focus our conversations on a different topic of like, oh, like how are we caring for people, or it's really great. There were parts of my life where I talked to my mom a lot less than I talked to my dad. Mm-hmm. But I think definitely like the past 2 years we've had a pretty good thing going, me and my mom, where I don't know, it's a good relationship. Mm-hmm. I think she's a less similar person to me than my dad is, and that's really great for some things and different for others.
Yeah.
But she's wonderful, and she's very, very caring, and she'll, yeah, I don't know. We have a good mutual care system of when she's feeling down, I can see that and help talk to her and bring her up. And when she sees that I'm down, she always notices and is like responds really nicely, where she's always watching out for the people around her's like emotions and how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really great to have at home.
Yeah. No, I feel like people who can have that kind of sixth sense, sort of like, I can sense that you're not doing great or that you're off. Like, it means a lot when people can notice that stuff.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't. And it's just like, you're paying attention to me and you know me, that you can see what's up. And I know that like religion has played a big part in your life and stuff too. So how did that, you know, how was that growing up? And then how did that kind of affect your mental health journey and stuff too?
Yeah. I would say I grew up in the church, and unlike a lot of people, I actually had a really positive experience with the church. Mm-hmm. Where it's always felt like a big family and community. And I have a lot of friends from the church, and I would say that my life is very faith-centric, faith-oriented. Mm-hmm. At this point. And it's really wonderful, and I derive a lot of meaning from it, a lot of motivation from it, and a lot of encouragement from it. And just the same way that I try to structure my life, where I have time with friends and I get out and I see people, I do also have a lot of habits to make sure that I'm staying like spiritually disciplined.
Yeah.
Similarly. So like I go to church on Sundays, or right now actually I don't go to church a lot of Sundays, but I, you know, go to Zoom church or what have you. And then I do Bible studies normally once or twice a week, mm-hmm. depending on when in the year we are. So right now it's twice a week.
Gotcha.
On Sunday nights and Wednesday nights.
Are they with other like college kids and stuff, or are they with, you know, like family from home and stuff?
Sunday nights is college kids.
Gotcha.
Wednesday nights is a few like people who've already graduated.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So are you just like broadly Christian, or is there like a, you know, Presbyterian, Lutheran, that kind of thing? Or is it just kind of the broader scope?
I would say in Texas, there's a lot of sort of non-denominational evangelical culture.
Okay.
And there's actually like a very specific brand of like Texas evangelical, which
is a brand.
That's how it feels. They have a lot of funny views that are very specific about mostly what the end of the world is going to look like. They're like, oh, well, there's going to be a rapture, and it's going to be all sorts of funny words that people use, where they're like pre-mill, pre-trib, something. The churches that I've gone to have kind of veered away from those really Texas leanings of like, it has to be this way, and this way.
Yeah.
Into just this sort of broader evangelical scope. Mm-hmm. So
how did, you know, your faith and stuff mesh with what you were experiencing when you were kind of going through those lows?
I would say that my lows corresponded with lows in my faith, where they kind of track with each other. When I'm feeling really motivated, honestly, sometimes it goes one way, sometimes it goes the other, where me feeling down hurts and takes away from my faith. And sometimes, like, me doubting my faith takes me down. So it's this kind of weird, like, connection between the two, where it's not always that one drives the other or vice versa. But often I think that when I comprehend what it is that I believe about the nature of God,
yeah,
that's actually really encouraging, because in the Bible, right, it teaches, right, at the core of the gospel is this message that Jesus came down to earth and suffered and, like, lost his life for the sins of many. So he suffered that we wouldn't have to, mm-hmm. and he's bearing all this pain for us so that we can be absolved of our sin and so that we can enjoy this, like, free gift of paradise in the afterlife, which is just incredible to think about, especially when you're in those thought patterns of, like, no one cares about me.
Yeah.
No one loves me. Like, no one would do anything for me, right? Like, they care about me a little bit, but not, like, enough to majorly disconvenience themselves, which is one of the thought patterns that I struggled with when mm-hmm. I was depressed. But when you think about it, like, what the gospel teaches and what I believe says, like, no, really, the Son of God and God himself, like, care about me, and he did definitely majorly disconvenience himself by coming
majorly disconvenience.
And dying on a cross for my sin. And, mm-hmm. and that's just, yeah, I don't know. It's so encouraging. And when I do really internalize that and feel that, it's kind of hard to say, like, oh, no one cares about me when you believe that.
Right. Yeah, I think faith is such an interesting thing to me, because I was not raised around religion, but I can see the value that it adds to so many people's lives. And I remember, like, just sometimes kind of wondering, like, what my life would have looked like had I been raised in, you know, some kind of faith community, because I do, you know, I would say that there's certain, like, institutions of religion that I feel kind of sometimes abuse that power that they have to serve their own self-interest. But I feel like the core values of, like, the faiths themselves are something I really respect and admire. And I admire people who live by those principles. And I just wonder what, you know, my life would have looked like had I been involved with something like that. And I remember I went to this church camp my summer between, like, fifth and sixth grade, and I had never been raised around religion and stuff. So that was kind of my first exposure to it. And I came back and I was like, Mom, all I want for Christmas is a Bible. That's all I want. Like, I was like, I came back, like, in it. And I was like, I got a purity ring and, like, everything. That did not last long, but, like, I was like, I was, like, determined to, like, be in it. And, you know, coming back and not having a faith community there and not having anything, it faded away within the year. But it was just an interesting glimpse into kind of that world that I just had never known. But I could totally see how, you know, being in a low place that could really, you know, help get you out of it a lot of times, because it is such a, like, those patterns of thinking of, like, no one cares about me enough, or, like, I'm not loved, I don't have a purpose, I'm not contributing to the world. And then having those faith beliefs could really impact that. Do you feel like, I don't know, how do you feel about other, like, college kids and kind of the culture around religion? I don't know, does that impact you? Does that ever, like, offend you, sort of, the way that people talk about it?
Well, really fast, I just want to say it's hilarious that you brought up church camp.
Yeah.
Because it was actually, like, my first time going to a really big church camp between eighth grade and freshman year, that I would say was, like, the end of that, like, big period of depression in my life. And it was actually, like, a summer camp with, like, a very similar experience. People talk about, like, a camp high.
Yeah.
That kind of really got me most of the way out.
Interesting.
And it's not, like, at the time I was like, oh yeah, like, okay, I was depressed, like, I'm coming out, I'm done. That's not turns out that's not the way it works.
Where unfortunately
I can't look back and be like, oh, you know, like, I had a good year for the entire year, for any year after that. Yeah. It's not something that you like you have and you get over, but it's like it's always like right around the corner when you're not looking for it.
Comes in waves for sure.
And that was something that I was not prepared for after, like, oh, my friend in seventh grade was depressed. I'm like, oh, yeah, like, I'm struggling with that now. And then, like, go to church camp. I'm like, oh, yeah, life's awesome.
Yeah.
And then, whatever, sophomore year, I struggled with it. Junior year, I struggled with it. The summers, I struggled with it. This past summer, I had some bad days, bad weeks. It's crazy. But then returning to the question you asked, I think a lot of people talk about religion in ways that I could find offending if I didn't understand where they were coming from, where a lot of people have had really negative experiences with a lot of very aggressive proponents of different faiths and different experiences. And especially once I talked to one or two people about their experiences, I understood why they could say, like, oh, I hate the church, or I never want a part of that. Because some people really have great, great reasons to believe those things. Mm-hmm. And it's always really hard for me to hear, like, oh, like, the church hurt a friend of mine, or, you know, I had a friend who, like, had a bad experience with the church. And it's really hard for me to hear that because I've had such a positive experience and I know, like, what it can do for people. And when I hear what people in the name of Christ do that harms people, I feel like it's just hard to think that people go around saying, like, oh, like, we're spreading love and, like, we're trying to help people. And so often it seems like they fail. And I talk to so many people who've had negative experiences with the church. So then when I find people who have, like, had positive experiences, it honestly seems really rare.
Yeah.
Which I feel like it should be the opposite.
Right.
But, in college, it's honestly a lot like my high school. So I've had a lot of experience dealing with, like, a very secular crowd of friends, and I like having a few friends who believe what I believe so that I know I'm not going crazy. but apart from that, I feel like I'm pretty accustomed to it.
No, I think that's really interesting because I think sometimes too the label that can kind of get associated with the church is, like, judgmental. And I think that, like, the way that you just said that too is, like, the antithesis of that, where it's like, yeah, I can see how some people have this aversion to religion because of their experiences. And it's like, that is so understanding and non-judgmental and stuff. And it is, I feel like that would be so hard to see something that had been so positive and so impactful in your life and see it harm other people and be like, what the heck? Like, why, you know, why does it have to be like this? That's a tough, like, realization. And do you feel like, you know, going through your kind of depressive states and stuff, because it is such a, so annoying in that, you know, it does go up and down. Like, you never really know when a low point's going to come. You never know when a good point's going to come, but it isn't something, for most people at least, that just, you know, is one episode and then it kind of goes away. How did you deal with that, you know, reoccurring kind of idea? And were there ever things that you noticed, like, would sort of trigger kind of a downward spiral, or was it just, like, you know, out of the blue?
I think definitely it's not something that I've perfectly figured out yet.
Yeah.
But rather it's this sort of continuous process that I'm still figuring out. But there are a few things that I found really help, like, prevent those things from happening, where I try to be very productive and like aware of how I'm spending my time and conscious of how I'm spending my time, because when I can look back on a few days and say like, oh, I haven't done anything of substance, that's really hard for me. Mm-hmm. And that'll put me in a bad place. So I try to always be not just doing my schoolwork, but also doing something creative, like reading a book, writing a song, anything that just feels like I'm either like consuming art or gaining knowledge in some meaningful way, mm-hmm. or putting something into the world or expressing myself in some meaningful way. And those like metrics of productivity in my head really, really help me. And then also exercise has been a big help to me, to stay motivated and structured and then not depressed.
Yeah.
Where always the like big downtrends in my life have been correlated with a lack of exercise as well.
Yeah. No, I feel like that's a really interesting one too, because that's kind of an underrated area that people don't talk about as much. And I know for me, exercise is also a really big factor, but I'm still really bad at doing it. Like, yeah. It's taken a lot to get me back into some kind of exercise routine. And I think it is one of those things that's like, when, you know, when I'm going through a really depressive episode, I have like zero energy in my body at all. And it's like, I know that exercising would help me have more energy, but like the thought of trying to move when I'm in that place is so hard. And so it's one of those frustrating things where I'm like, I know what would help me, but I just can't really get myself to do it, which is like, again, the perils of depression and what it looks like, the irony of it all. And, you know, how's the transition to college been? Because I know for a lot of people that can be a pretty rough experience. And then also that we're in a pandemic doesn't necessarily help anything.
Yeah, I think honestly, coming to college was a really great change compared mm-hmm. to being back home, where I didn't see a lot of my friends because they're all very nervous about the pandemic. And the situation in Texas is not great. There's not a lot of readily available testing. Mm-hmm. People aren't very good about wearing masks in public places. It's like this general feeling of not safe.
Yeah.
So then coming here to a place where all the business leaders here seem better prepared to deal with the pandemic, the college, Northeastern University, has a really great program and set of guidelines for infectious disease and coronavirus testing. And so do a lot of the colleges in Boston too around mm-hmm. us. Like BU has the same testing centers, basically.
Yeah.
Harvard's doing the same testing. Suffolk is doing the same testing. It's all these places that are just really doing the things that make sense to actually reduce the number of cases and keep people safe. So I found that people here are a little better about getting out of the house and being willing to sit down outside and have a conversation yeah. with me. And that's been really great. And then in terms of exercise, I've had to like kind of figure out new routines once I've been here, where back home for a lot of the pandemic, I would exercise like once or twice a week and it wasn't great. And then I started running almost every day in August, and that was amazing. And then coming here, I kind of let some of that slide as I was trying to figure out, oh, how am I going to do classes? How am right. I going to meet people? Like, who are my friends? What's Boston like? What's yeah. living in a new place without my parents like? But now I've worked into a really better pattern of like, I walk places and I skate places, and now I run a few times a week, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we're at this point kind of now in the college transition where it's like, hopefully we've kind of established like more of a routine. We kind of know what to expect. We have a better idea of things. Whereas I think, yeah, right when you come, it's kind of like, how am I going to make friends? What do my classes look like? When do I sleep? What do I do? Like, where do I go to eat? Like, there's just kind of a lot of questions that you're trying to figure out all at once. And I also feel like you do such a good job of, like, being social and, like, really, like, honestly, you know, like, everyone in the building. And I'm like, how do you do this? Like, I really respect the way that you've, like, connected with a bunch of people. Like, you know, like, everyone's names. You always say hi. You're always outside hanging out. And I feel like for a lot of people, just having you and just being like, oh, there's a familiar face and he's going to say hi to me. And, like, I know that I can talk to him is really reassuring for a lot of people. I know it definitely is for me, where I'm like, oh, I can say hi. Like, it's just, it makes it, you know, it makes you feel less alone. And it's like, oh, there's a person who recognizes me, especially like especially just with the masks and stuff. Like, it's hard sometimes to feel like you have that connection, or even just literally to recognize people sometimes is a little hard.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's, you know, it's a big deal that you have made the connections that you have. And I just feel like it's so, I am more of a hermit. I know that we've talked about this too. If I'm like, I need to get out, like, I need to go out and, like, hang out with all of you guys and meet more of you guys. But I think you do a really good job of, like, connecting with all the people and stuff. So, like, how did you, is that just something that comes naturally to you, or was that kind of a conscious effort of, like, I'm going to push myself to socialize?
I think I've always been pretty extroverted like that, where I like spending a lot of time with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And especially right near the end of high school, I felt like I did a really good job connecting with a bunch of people in my grade. So mm-hmm. it was a very similar experience to living in this dorm, where I felt like I went to school and I knew almost everyone in my grade. I could say hi to almost everyone in my grade. And it felt like a really natural, like, good connection with most of those people. So coming to college, that was just like, oh, like, I'm going to school again. There are people to meet. Yeah. I can figure out, like, what they like, say hi, get to know them. And that wasn't too hard. But one of the things that I've had to be pretty intentional about is kind of giving myself the time to do that. And, what I've been doing is I've been trying to prioritize getting as much of my schoolwork as possible done during, like, the hours of the working day.
Yeah.
So that sort of, like, 8 to 5 time is when I go to class, and I also do my homework in between classes, and I try to eat lunch or breakfast and lunch every day. Intentional eating habits also helps with depression for me.
I'm so bad at that. oh my God.
So that's a thing that I try to stay really careful about too, mm-hmm. is making sure that I get at least 2 meals a day, and 3 if I can manage. And so what I've done is I've tried to figure out the schedule so that after 5, I can set down my work and know that I don't have anything that's due tomorrow, and I can relax and actually enjoy genuine time with the people that I'm with, instead of worrying about, like, oh, like, I have an assignment that's due at midnight. I have to get back to the dorm, or, like, I have a project I need to work on. Like, I'm really sorry, but I have to go.
Yeah.
And I think that's been really helpful, because if I was staying up until 3 a.m. doing homework, I would not be the way that I am right now.
No, that's very true. Yeah, I feel like just like college kids in general too, we're like, all right, time to start homework at 11 p.m. because it is, you know, the day itself can be draining of, like, back-to-back classes, and you're just like, kind of feel like you need time to recharge. But I feel like making that intentional effort of, like, I'm going to use the working day to get all my stuff done, and then I'll have time to kind of socialize and not have to have that looming stress of, like, yeah, I have an assignment due at 11:59, like, better get that together, is such a good way of, like, approaching things. And I hope that I will start on that track. I've gotten better. I'm definitely better than I was in high school, but that's a special journey still. And, like, yeah, do you feel like you've made, you know, solid friendships and stuff here? And are they comparable to ones that you had back home?
I do. I think a lot of my friendships here aren't yet as like solid as the ones I have back home, where there are a lot of people back home who I've known for over 5 years or over 10 years. And it's one of those things where I know that I can always kind of count on them to be there for me, and they'll always, like, be happy to see me. And it's not like that friendship's going anywhere. Right. And having known so many of the people in college for, I don't know how long we've been here, 6 weeks, seven weeks?
A month and a half.
I have a lot of great friendships, but I don't always feel that same sort of like firm foundations in the friendships. One of the really nice privileges we got as Northeastern University students recently was after maintaining such a low case count for so long, we're now allowed one visitor in our living spaces from within our same hall. So that's allowed me to go and work with one friend of mine who's generally pretty quiet just during the day. So I'll go sit in there and do classes. And he doesn't have a roommate, so it's just the two of us in his room.
That's perfect.
And that's been really nice because it's really easy to meet the people who are really like social butterfly because they're always hanging out. But now being able to sit in someone's room and do work with them and then just talk every now and again has helped me make some like more quiet, stable friends.
Yeah, it's definitely a win for the introverts at this point.
It is a win for the introverts. But I've really valued those more quiet friends who are more, you know, stable.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. I think it's, they definitely add, like, I don't know. I consider myself kind of a mix. I would say I'm like that annoying person who's like, I'm an introvert with extroverted tendencies. Because I'm like, you know, I do enjoy socializing and I feel like I can do it fairly well. But I also, if I'm not kind of pushed to that or forced to that, my tendency is going to be to stay in my room. Also, it's hard because I love my roommate. Yeah. So it's like we just talk all day long and we're both very chatty. So there's never a, you know, dull moment and stuff. And I'm honestly like, you know, maybe if I didn't like her as much that I'd get out more and meet other people. But you know what? It works out.
And I mean, I think that's a great problem to have, is loving your roommate is like,
I know, such a struggle.
Wow, yeah, what a struggle. But no, I would understand why you would describe yourself as an introvert with extroverted tendencies, or it sounds kind of funny when you're trying to write that down or something on the paper. Yeah, exactly. But like getting to know you, I think that makes a lot of sense for you.
Well, I'm glad you think I labeled myself right. But yeah, and I always like to ask people at the end too, like, what if you could give a piece of advice to your younger self, what do you think you would say?
I think I would touch on just a few things that I've already said, really, which is that when that first big episode of depression ended, that's not the end. Yeah. And it's not like at least in my life, I've found that like it's not like, oh, like I'm depressed right now and then I'm not depressed another time, but rather it's this idea of trying to figure out how to live with depression and like prevent it from becoming a hindrance to what you want to do with your life and how you want to live your life. So I would say that's a big thing, is I didn't really know that. And I know that now. I would also say regular eating schedules, regular sleeping schedules, regular exercise schedules are all super important. Sleeping, eating, exercise would just help so much with so many of the things that I was struggling with. Where looking back, I had some summers where I wasn't sleeping enough, or I wasn't eating enough, or I wasn't exercising enough. And those are the parts of my life which I always look back at and I'm like, oh man, what was I thinking? Yeah. It's like, I just think it's really good to develop intentional habits and then making sure that either you're holding yourself accountable, or I guess if I were addressing my younger self, I should be holding myself accountable back then. And then making sure that there are people that you can trust to help keep you accountable when you're not doing it yourself.
Yeah.
I think.
No, I love that. I love that. And I think, I feel like too, yeah, it is so important to know that like depression is something you live with. And it's like, for me, it's more of like, yeah, like gradations of intensity rather than like it's there or it's not there. So I feel like that is something that is such a good piece of advice of just being like, buckle up, it'll be here, but it doesn't mean that you can't do what you want to do and live the way that you want to live. So yeah. I love that. Dude, thank you so much for doing this.
Of course.
I very much appreciate it. And I also feel like you are so well respected and well known in the building too, that I was like, you know what? I feel like this will be good too, because I feel like other people will be more comfortable seeing that you did it. And so I'm very grateful that you gave me your time and your story. So yes, thank you.
For sure.